Good afternoon and welcome to Who's in the Kitchen. I'm Philothea Beeson and you're listening to WDRT 91.9 FM and streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org, where you can go and listen to previous shows, podcasts. Just go to Archives and then Who's in the Kitchen, and you'll find many interesting shows. If you like this one and you want to replay it later, you can go to our website, WDRT.org. We're coming from the Driftless area of Wisconsin, southwestern Wisconsin, a beautiful area. We're having just some wonderful weather as we move into June. And my guest today is Julie de la Terre. Welcome, Julie.
Hi there. Hi. It's really great to be here with you again.
Good. Yes, I have had Julie on at least once before, and I usually see her at the farmer's market. That's the main place and where I encounter her. She sells regularly at the Viroqua Farmer's Market, and she has a farm called Singing Trees Farm, which she calls Ecological Restoration Agriculture. Food and habitat to nourish us and all our relations. And I know you grow feed for animals too, and you think about the animals as well as the people.
Right.
And so I am just going to let you go, because I guess you're really interested in producing food that you can, or, you know, maybe, what do you call it? When you work on the food and prepare it or can it or preserve it and that kind of thing, and you want to sell it. But anyway, let's talk about your issue right now, Julie.
Right. I'll pick up that issue. But I did want to say something about the weather. The weather has been really beautiful, but it's extremely dry.
Yeah.
It's the driest it's ever been in all the years that I have been growing food, and I've been growing food since I was 8 years old.
Wow. The lawns are getting crunchy. When you walk, the grass is crunchy.
I don't think it's just a matter of no rain. It's a matter that the air is extremely dry. I think it has something to do with the smoke coming down from Canada. There's it could be a very tragic situation if we don't get some decent water. I mean, I was out trying to get some ground prepared yesterday, and it's like dust. I've never had anything like that before. So to comment on that, smaller farms with directed water, usually I don't irrigate, but I just go out and just put the water on each plant because I'm small enough to do that. But if you have to irrigate, you're wasting a lot of water because the air is so dry right now. So people need to think about supporting agricultural systems that conserve water, right? And a lot of these big outfits, they get these high-capacity well permits, and they pull the water out of the ground, and they throw it out in these great big sprayers, and 90% of it goes up in the atmosphere, and they deplete the aquifer. And like I said, if we're in a drought, we continue to be in a drought. People should be concerned about their aquifer. People should be concerned about how their food is produced. Is water being wasted in the way their food is being produced? For the most part, from what I can see, my own experience is smaller farms conserve their water. They use more mulch. They use methods that are labor saving because there isn't enough of them to get all the work done, and they don't have equipment doing it. The water gets wasted when you have large industrial farms and one operator on a huge tractor or somebody pressing a button, turning on a pump, and that's where all the waste comes in. So another good reason to support small local farmers: they have the ability to adjust to changing conditions, and they also have the ability to restore their landscapes, not treat it like it's, I don't know, I call what industrial farming does to the land ecocide. Other people have used that, but basically you destroy everything there, and you bring in something, and then you just grow that one thing, and everything else is destroyed. Small habitat restoration farmers don't do that, and there's a bunch of them out there. So I just encourage people to go to the farmer's market, talk to the farmers there, ask them how they grow what they grow, or look out in your community. There's plenty of them out there, and go visit them and have a conversation with them and be part of restoring the earth and the land, not destroying it. And what's happening now we'll go back to your original comment, is I recently looked into trying to produce food and get it into stores near Milwaukee. And I went over there and talked to the lady, and she goes, well, this has to be made in a commercial kitchen. I'm like, seriously? Like, if I dry a mint leaf, I've got to dry it in a commercial kitchen? oh, blah, 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 this and that, this and that. I'm like, okay, great, this is wonderful. So I went home and I looked up the state law and started doing some research on what the Wisconsin requires of us. And there is a pickle law in place right now, and some people really had to fight hard for that, because the state of Wisconsin wasn't even going to let us sell baked goods or canned goods out of our kitchen. And there was a lawsuit. I'm trying to see if I see the date. Okay, this is date signed December 28, 2022. So this wasn't very long ago. The Wisconsin Cottage Food Association versus the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. What they wanted is that the state would leave them alone while they'd made their pickles and their baked goods in their houses, and they would go and sell them at the farmer's market or out of their homes or, you know, anywhere like that. But you can't do it wholesale. I mean, they did get this, so I could go to the farmer's market and sell my baked goods and my pickles, but I still can't go into a store. I still have to go into a commercial kitchen to make the thing if it's going to go into retail. So, and then this pickle law also has a cap on how much money a person can make out of their kitchen, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Oh.
Seriously, the state of Wisconsin says you can't make more than $5,000 a year selling baked goods and canned goods out of your kitchen. So, I mean, that's an insult.
So who lobbied for that?
Who lobbied for what? The $5,000
yes.
cap? Well, you know.
Who's threatened
it
by
doesn't
this?
Take much imagination to know what's going on here. Basically, the food industry does not want enterprising, mostly women, to feed their communities out of their kitchens. Because when they were arguing in this case in court, I have this 20-page document in front of me right now, but in the final analysis, There were exceptions given, exemptions, and that those were given to bars and churches to go ahead and sell food and make money, but not women out of their kitchens. So who runs a church? Mostly men. Who runs a bar? Mostly men. Who makes the food in their kitchen? Mostly women.
I'm going to make a political comment.
You should. You should totally.
But that seems to be totally contradictory to the idea that they want to keep women in the home and not fund subsidized child care so people can work. So if you want to keep the women at home and then you don't let them make more than $5,000 a year baking, it seems to be contradictory.
Well, that's the barefoot part, okay? They can't make any money while they're in their home. They have to be completely subservient to the men making the money. I mean, they don't want women to thrive. What the heck, you know? So anyway, it's right in our law. This is misogyny and patriarchy in our state laws. All you got to do is get on the internet and start looking up some state statutes, and you'll see it's full of patriarchy. So I'm just saying women are so powerful that they've got to pass laws to make sure we can't make more than $5,000 a year. But when I looked at Alabama, you can make $20,000 a year and they leave you alone. And there isn't even any inspectors coming into your space. That's Alabama. Alabama's way nicer than we are. There's something the matter with Wisconsin. The people running our government are just so retrograde. I just can't believe it. So, and on a local level, a couple weeks ago, I was at the farmer's market. Here comes the Vernon County Health Department. Oh, you got eggs there. You got eggs. Oh, you can't sell eggs. You got to get an egg selling license. I go, you got to be kidding me. Come on. I only sell like 6 dozen a week or whatever. And there's other people, too, bringing in a few here and a few there from their little flock. And they're going around saying, well, if you want to sell eggs, you got to pay for a license. You got to give us $100 for an egg selling license. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So, I looked it up. I looked up the state statute. The county is wrong. If you have 150 hens or more, you have to have a license. But less than 150 hens at a farmer's market, you can sell eggs. So even our local unit of government was going around trying to extort $100 from poor people trying to make a couple bucks on their chicken eggs. I mean, every layer of government, they're trying to take another bite out of you. And what are they doing? They're taking your hard labor, your commitment, everything that you do. And guess what? You pay their salary. Without our taxes, they don't have a job. So why are they showing up oppressing us when we're trying to have a community here?
Yes, and I'm learning that you have to really press what really are the regulations. That's what you're doing. What are the regulations, and who made these, and are they even accurate? Are they even, what you found out is they weren't even being accurately represented.
No.
And that gets into the plastic industry, and I'm looking at the plastic that's at the farmer's market and in the grocery stores, and the excuse is, the health department says we have to have clamshells, and the health department says that, you know, everything has to be wrapped in plastic, and we're trying to pursue that with Viroqua Plastic Free to find out who says that, and is that even really true, and are the local merchants misled?
And, well, you know, I don't have any plastic at my booth at the farmer's market, and the health department went through and they didn't say a darn thing.
Well,
so
good.
I don't think that that is true.
I don't think anybody should have to have plastic. We've had outdoor markets for thousands of years, and we never had anything in plastic.
No, I mean, all my stuff is either in glass, cellophane, compostable cellophane, or compostable packaging. People can do it, but you gotta go out there and you've got to find the packaging. And it's not as easy and it's not as cheap as getting that crappy plastic packaging.
Right.
So people could go and say, hey, take that out of that clamshell. Maybe they want to buy something from somebody at the farmer's market. Just say, take it out of the plastic. I'm going to put it in my bag. You can have the plastic. And if people start doing that over and over and over again, they're like, well, okay, fine.
Right. And I'm really encouraging people who come shopping to bring their own bags. And they, you know, there's canvas bags. Mm-hmm. You can reuse your old plastic bags until they fall apart. And then you can also, there's mesh bags that you can put your lettuce and produce in,
you know,
before you throw them in your canvas or plastic bag. But there's really, a farmer's market should be able to be plastic-free.
Oh, I think it would be awesome if it was a plastic-free farmer's market. So what we did is we got some display cases, and our stuff is behind the case.
What a good idea!
So just put it in the case, and when they buy it, you either give it to them in your hand or you put it in a paper bag. No plastic involved. I think a lot of this is it's easy to just load and unload things inside of plastic clamshells. It's fast. It's easy.
Well,
they throw it out there.
It doesn't crush your beautiful pastries. And
right.
I can see, and you know, you can see through it, and it looks really shiny and looks really clean. But what a great idea. Hey, a bakery case?
Right.
Wonderful.
So we haul bakery cases around. It's not that easy because they're kind of big and kind of annoying, and you got to pack them a certain way. But I don't use any plastic. So why not just say, okay, that booth over there uses no plastic, everybody. Go see what they do, okay? They pulled it off.
We
can pull it off.
We can learn from each other.
Exactly.
Right.
I should probably put a big sign there, you know, to get people to really realize this is possible.
Well, July is supposedly, I don't know who declared it, it's plastic-free July.
Oh.
So we'll aim for July that we really, really try to do this.
Right.
And I'm trying to encourage people to bring their own bags.
Right, and I'm also can say there's no plastic in the food I sell because I don't use plastic in my fields. So according to the organic standards, you can use plastic mulch in your fields to grow your crops. Okay, if anybody has ever seen that, it's very, very thin and it's black.
Sits in the sun and breaks down.
Exactly, and it's only good for 1 year. And
I ordered some paper.
Oh, cool.
Agricultural paper, and I used that.
Nice.
And it will, you know, last for a year or two, but then it's just paper.
So is that like leftover from a sawmill kind of, like where's the paper fiber come from, do you know?
That's a good question, because you think there's all these layers. So
of course.
I'm using paper instead of plastic, but it's made from, you know, I know, GMO-raised trees, or I don't know, whatever.
Right.
No, but, yeah.
So then you think about, okay, so they're using plastic in the field, so I'm surrounded by Amish that use this, right? They don't recycle it. Okay, every spring they put it in big piles and they burn it. And they burn it at night so nobody sees. And there's huge plumes of black smoke everywhere. And it's from that plastic. So, but it's okay because they're organic. All right, so now they're using that instead of, I don't know, some weed killer. Which is worse? A whole bunch of black smoke going into the air from plastic
with
everywhere.
Toxins.
Over Wisconsin.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Or something else, and that's an organic practice to pollute the atmosphere with burning black plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So that really annoys me. And so we'll go into regulations a little bit because I was looking into organic standards, but I think maybe I should finish this one before I go into another one. Because
you're trying to spend some time out in the field, right? But you're having to read regulations and go to meetings and, you know. Well, protest?
The thing is, I wanted to expand my business. I want to be able to make a decent living. And I'm already killing myself in the field, doing the field work and the weeding and the planting and the starting of everything and the harvesting and the processing. And now I want to make a living on all this work. And I'm coming up against all these impediments because they don't want small businesses, mm-hmm. particularly small mm-hmm. businesses led by women in Wisconsin. We are the reason the state exists. Women have fed civilization since the dawn of time. Our work is more important than any other work out there. We do the work of production and reproduction. And how do you keep a community healthy? You feed them good food. And they're making sure, the powers that be are making sure that they sever people from good food and from food made with loving care and good intent. And so people have to go out and buy some kind of industrial crap that has absolutely no value to it because they don't have access to the real stuff, right? And so, like, when you're forced to support the industrial food system, you're supporting an inherent violent system because the only reason that system exists is because of the global south. They have went down there, stole the land from the global south. The people from Mexico are coming up here because we've destroyed their economy. So they're doing the field work because we can't do that kind of work. It's extremely difficult. Plus, we stole their crops. We're using them as basically slave labor in our fields. And we're shipping food, you know, thousands of miles. We're living in a fake food system. It's not durable. It's not replicable. As soon as you start messing with it, with global chaos or droughts or whatever, it will collapse. So if you want to be healthy, if you want to have access to food and not starve to death, you need to reach out into your community, find your food producers, and or start growing it yourself. Instead of mowing your lawn, maybe you want to start growing some food for yourself and put the lawnmower away. I say just go recycle it, turn it into something else. What a waste of time. And start thinking about how vulnerable you are. If you're going to rely on big business or other industries to provide everything that you need, they can take it away mm-hmm. in a heartbeat, mm-hmm. and you have nothing. I mean, that's what happened in Cuba. I can't remember this, either the 70s or the 80s, they lost their oil supply from Russia, and everybody had to rip up their lawns and grow food, and the average Cuban lost 20 pounds. It's called the special period. So they've gone through that, and they had to recover. That could happen here. That could easily right. happen here. But right. what we have to realize is the system we're in is a violent system. We stole the land away from the Native Americans. We use people that have nothing to do our labor. And here we sit here eating this food that's not even real. I mean,
and we dicker about the price. Because one of the things I'd like to say is when you go to the farmer's market and the lettuce is, you know, two heads for $5, just pay it. I mean, those people have worked. Can you imagine sowing the seed, cultivating it, weeding it, you know, harvesting it, washing it, bringing it to the farmer's market,
oh my
and standing
gosh.
There for 4 hours
yep.
and driving. And people do try to bargain down at the farmer's market, mm-hmm. and I think, oh my gosh.
I know it.
How much work has gone into this? And
right.
it's the best food that you can get. It's local and it's seasonal.
Right, right. So, because the real cost of food has been externalized.
Right.
Right? It's externalized by mm-hmm. paying migrant workers nothing. It's externalized by stealing the water from the aquifers. It's externalized by using all this big equipment that the government supports that, by the way. They want big farms. They want big CAFOs. They want all kinds of equipment. Our government is behind that. It subsidizes that. It subsidizes agriculture that's destroying us and destroying the planet. And that's our tax money mm-hmm. paying for that. We pay those government officials to destroy our livelihood and our future.
Well, this is why we really need to pay attention to the farm bills when they come up. We have a farm bill coming up for a vote, and it's you know, very, very complicated. But anybody who eats really needs to understand what kind of policies are influencing the farm bill.
Mm-hmm.
And even the egg, you know, there's a little tiny committee for organics trying to struggle to fight for organic standards, and they're being compromised all the time.
Well, the organic standards already suck, though. They're already bad.
Well, like you're saying, a lot of people can get away with things that, you know, really aren't organic. And you know, and so they have to keep going and trying to retweak and say, well, you know, 10,000 chickens on a farm isn't really meeting the intention of organic, you know. But you can get away with large, you know, CAFOs.
That's why there needs to be a whole different shebang here. Forget the organic industry. Start again. Start fresh.
How about the whole agricultural
system? Right,
right.
I mean, the thing that bothers me is, why do I have to pay to have someone come and look at my farm and tell me or prove that I'm not destroying the land or destroying people with chemicals? Why aren't they labeling all the chemical crap and leave me alone? Why should I have to pay that extra money because I'm doing the right thing? Why do the criminals get a free pass and I've got to pay a whole bunch of money? That makes absolutely no sense. So I think we should just assume everything is contaminated with chemicals and they have to label it. Okay, so you go to a store, there's all this what they call conventional produce. Okay, I want a list of every single herbicide and insecticide on that apple right there. If it's 20, I want 20 of it. I want to know what's on that food. Why do I have to pay to say, oh, I didn't put that on my food? So the whole thing is topsy-turvy.
It is topsy-turvy.
To begin with. Mm-hmm. And so then when you start looking at organics, you know, if I wanted to get certified organic, I started looking into it. I said, forget it. I'm not going to spend $5,000 when I only make $10,000 on the farm a year. I'm not going to spend half of my money to prove that I'm not contaminating you. So I just say, hey, come out to my farm. I'll show you what I'm doing. That's all. That's the best I can do. I'm not going to play these games with these people because I started looking at the organic standards, and their organic standards are ridiculous. Number one, they won't let me make compost out of my dead vegetation without going through a certain series of things. And I have to check a temperature, and I have to turn it, and whatever. I just throw my weeds in a pile, and about a year later, they turn in the soil, and I put it on the garden. But they won't let me use that. They won't let me call it compost. But in the regulations, if you're a compost maker, you can put dead animals in your compost pile. And guess where those dead animals come from? The CAFOs. So all kinds of compost is out there. It's being sold to us as organic compost, and it's got rotting animals from great big chicken CAFOs and other CAFOs in it. The whole reason the law exists is so there's somewhere for those dead animals to go. Okay, so there is a dance between the organic standards and big conventional farming that we're not told about, okay? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I know a garlic grower, what did he fertilize his garlic with? Feather meal. Where'd the feather meal come from? A chicken CAFO, and he's still organic. So there are these relationships between the organic industry and the conventional industry that we're not told about, and it's right there in the regulations. So there's a relationship with the petrochemical industry. There's a relationship with the CAFO industry. So I don't think there's any validity whatsoever in national organic standards or any of these people. And then now they got the strengthening organic enforcement rule, right? That just came out. And we got to make sure that organic corn that coming from Turkey is really organic, blah, blah, blah. That's their reason for it. You start reading it, it's like, oh, now small farmers, now an inspector can come in unannounced. And now we're going to make you file even more paperwork. And now we're going to do, and it's not going after the big industry. It's going after the small farmers, layering even more paperwork on top of them. Why do you think they're doing this? It's the same playbook. That's how they got rid of the dairy industry. That's how they got rid of the little cheese plants. That's how they got rid of the mom-pa farms over the last 100 years, is they keep hitting you and hitting you and hitting you with regulations till you can't even deal with it anymore and you go out of business. They're trying to get rid of small organic farms because now the organic industry is $62 billion worth of industry every year in North America. And they don't want us to compete with them because now it's big. Now the big organics want to take over, and they don't want us competing with them. And that's why they're doing all this, and they're playing their little dance with the legislators to do that. You know that. They're all up there. They're all in one big cabal, and they're not representing us, even though we're paying their paycheck. It's insane. It's evil. I don't have any faith in any of these people. So what I'm saying is, who do you have faith in? The people you know, in your community, on the land, That's where the rubber hits the road. I hate to use that. Maybe not rubber. try not to use petrochemical terms. But anyway, that's where you're going to get authenticity. Mm-hmm. If you really want accountability and authenticity, don't wait for a regulation to bring that to you, because more often than not, it will not.
Where do the regulations come? They come from people who actually don't have very much direct contact with the things they're regulating. And so, yeah, how many farmers are there anymore?
Right. Like these people that make these laws, did they raise produce for 20 years before they made the law? Of course not. They don't know anything about it. Yeah, a bunch of bureaucrats. I don't have any faith in any of this.
Well,
there needs to be a food revolution.
Yes. Okay. I'm listening to and trying to converse with Julie De La Terre. She's getting me all excited too. And I, you know, I really see your point of view. And I, you know, I grow things myself, but I've never tried to make money doing it. But I mean, I just don't know how you could make money doing it on a small farm. But CSAs and local farmers markets are just life-saving, and I hope that people can, you know, recognize their value in the community, community-supported agriculture, which is buying from somebody in advance and saying, I'm going to buy produce from you for the summer. Then you kind of take a risk. You see what they go through, and hey, we didn't get any lettuce this year, or you know, our peppers never made fruit, or you know, and so where's the peppers in my monthly box? Well, we had a crop failure. I mean, you really participate more in agriculture that way, local community agriculture. But I'm talking to Julie De La Terre. She has a little farm near Viola. How many acres do you have?
We've got three different locations.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, that makes it complicated too. Well, and it's called Singing Trees Farm, and she's really trying to help us understand, you know, restorative agriculture. You know, put back into the soil what you took out, and don't take out or pollute what's pure. And you know, take care of it. And we are kind of going to focus on some efforts that Julie has made to, you know, I still can't think of the word, value added stuff to her food, and then be able to sell it wherever. And finding that she's running into all kinds of legislative obstacles. So. She has experience. This is not just sitting around theoretically and getting mad, but actually having to deal with the system and finding how unfair it really is.
Right. So then I got an email from the guy from DATCAP. I can't remember his name now.
Oh, what's DATCAP?
Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, okay. Which are the people that are being sued in this lawsuit that's sitting in front of us. A group of cottage, they're called the Wisconsin Cottage Food Association. People making food in their kitchens sued the state of Wisconsin for putting undue duress on them and keeping them from actually making a living. So there, right there, this court case alone shows you that the state of Wisconsin is not interested in supporting small local food businesses, because they wouldn't have had to go to court to do this if the state was actually for us.
Well,
right?
What is the status of this court case?
Well,
is it pending? Or?
No, they did win. The plaintiffs did win, but there's still a cap on how much you can sell at the farmer's market. That cap is $5,000. And if you want to sell wholesale, let's say I want to sell to a store in Milwaukee, I have to go and follow all the regulations, which they sent me in an email. And some of those are absolutely ridiculous.
Okay. Share some
of my, this is a great one. Okay, so if you're out in the country and you're going to use well water, you got to have your well water tested, make sure there's no E. coli in it. So I asked the guy, I said, are you making the people who make their food in cities, are you making them have report what's in their water? And he said, no. And I said, well, let me send you a link. And I went to ewg.org/tapwater, and I showed them that there, almost every city, I would have to say every city, is contaminated with cancer-causing chemicals, and they're allowed to put that in the food and not even report it. Okay, so I sent Sheboygan, or was it? Yeah, Sheboygan had 13 cancer-causing chemicals in their water, and they had arsenic at 8 times the federal limit. So someone in Sheboygan could use a commercial kitchen and use that water in their food, and that's fine. But if you're out in the country and you have a well.
Oh, well water.
Oh, my gosh. Better watch out. And then, let's say you rented a commercial kitchen. Guess what? After you make your food, you can't take it home and sell it. You got to store it at the commercial kitchen. And then if there's no room in the commercial kitchen to store it, you have to pay for a licensed food storage facility. That's insane. These are meant so that small operators can't even get up off the ground, okay? Then you have to have a food recall plan with the federal, with the FDA. You have to have a registered food recall plan, okay? Then you have to make sure all your utensils and everything you use is at the kitchen. And then you've got to keep track of every single thing that you make because they want to make sure you don't cheat and make something at home, right? And then you have to have, I'm trying to think, I should have listed everything. There was so many hoops to run through. Oh, then you have to have an inspector come out. Then you have to have, you have to tell them how you make every single thing. And then you have to, there's something else. There was so much stuff. It's like the what they asked someone like me to do would be what they'd ask the Hormel meatpacking plant to do. They're treating people like me like I'm a great big multinational corporation that's only interested in profit, not people.
Right. Well, are they really holding Hormel responsible? Are they really having those inspections?
Right. So then I looked in this court case and they said there's not one case of someone in Wisconsin getting sick from food made in a kitchen, in a woman's kitchen. How many people get sick from, like, Hormel and, I don't know, these big...
Oh,
people get sick all the time.
And...
Sick all the time. And they get a pass, but they're going to breathe down my neck because I want to make top-quality food for people, so it's medicine. I'm making medicine. Good food is medicine. It keeps you alive. It helps you think clearly. It helps you fight the government. Of course they don't want us to eat good food because then there might be a revolution and we'll take them down. So actually, eating good food is how we're going to change the world. Okay? So Philothea, you're one of the women that are out there trying to change the system. The system is completely the opposite of what it should be. Our government isn't serving us. Our food is making the conventional food we eat is making us sick. We're being disconnected from each other all the time by, you know, cell phones and technology and whatever. Everything that we should be doing, we're not doing. So we need to have a total rethink on what kind of society we want to live in. Do we want to live in one where we value happiness more than money? Where we value our health? Where we value our children's future? Or do we want to just listen to all this crap that the government's constantly telling us? You know, how to think and how to live and blah, blah, blah. And, oh, isn't the thing we're telling you about just so much more valuable than an average person on the street because we're the experts? No, they're not the experts. They're owned by the industry.
Well, I just wanted to bring that up. We blame the government, but the government is really influenced by these, you know, mega corporations, these powerful interests, and what can you do? So here I see, you know, pages and pages of a lawsuit that, you know, was brought by the cottage industry, and how many committee meetings do they have to do, and how much research do they have to do when they really are trying to grow food and produce it and make it available to the public. And they're having to do all these kinds of legal things and go to Madison and go to Washington to try to fight big business interests.
It's sick.
It is.
It's really sick. Industry wants to destroy us, okay? We're just fodder for them. They don't care because when you look at a corporate charter, the stockholders come first. They're not out there doing social things for people. They only make money. That's how they make their decisions. If a few people die, no problem. We still made a profit. That's who we're up against. Mm-hmm. If you support your local food producer, I don't think I would wish anybody to get sick or die from my food. So I'm going to do the best job I can to make sure they have something so extremely wonderful that they'll want to come back.
Well, Julie, tell me specifically what you have made and how it could possibly kill somebody. I mean, there might be... I mean, baked goods. I mean, has anybody ever died of baked goods? I mean, I'm really wondering.
Nobody,
you've been baking... what, pastries, cakes, cornbread? I don't know what you do.
I do gluten-free because I can't have gluten, and now I'm doing vegan and gluten-free.
And
so,
you're doing cookies, cakes, pies?
Yep, everything, muffins, and my daughter's doing stuff.
So what goes into that that could be dangerous, or what in the process is so scary?
Well, that's the thing. When you think about it, if they're layering that regulation on me, it's because they're thinking about Hormel. They're thinking about animal feces getting on the meat. So they're thinking about, oh, we better make sure her kitchen's as clean as that kitchen, so we better make sure everybody follows the same regulation. So they think, well, what, I'm going to have, like, my dog run through and defecate in my kitchen, and then I'm going to make food there? I mean, they treat, because industry is so bad, they are so bad that they have to really regulate them. And that's how they're looking at us.
Mm-hmm.
The people, the women that have fed the generations, they're treating us like we're a meatpacking plant, like we don't know what we're doing. To me, it's disrespectful. It's a slap in the face. We raise these people. They're probably mostly men making these laws, by the way. We raise them. They grew up with a mother and a grandmother. And so what do? They pass laws like this. It's because somebody's giving them some money to do it. That's why. Hopefully they're not sleeping at night after that happens. But we all know this is what's happening here in the world. In every country of the world, it's the people versus the corporations. Doesn't matter where you are on the planet, that's where we're at right now. And corporations stand for greed because their sole reason for existence is to make money for their stockholders. So that's the way it is.
Yeah, that is one of the imbalanced things, is the stockholders making money on the profits of the corporation and the money not being used actually to improve or to obey regulations that need to be obeyed. Money is going to investors. I'm an investor. We're all investors. Mm-hmm. If we have, you know, a mutual fund or something, if we have a retirement fund, we're forced to be investing in the same system.
I'm glad you're using the word investing. So what about supporting your local food supply?
Yes.
Why don't you invest in the health of your community? Why don't you invest in that? Because what does that bring? It might not be a big fat bunch of money in your bank, but it will bring happiness, it will bring beauty, it will bring a future for the coming generations, and it will bring land restoration, it will bring all of that, which might not be, you know, a bank account, but why do we only focus on bank accounts? Why don't we focus on what really makes us enjoy ourselves as human beings? Mm-hmm. It's what we see, it's what we smell, it's what we experience, it's our relationships with each other, and all our that's what gives us happiness. A dollar does not make me happy when I put it in my pocket.
No.
But if I hear a bird I haven't heard before, I'm happy all day long.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't that bird way more important than that dollar?
Well, I'm certainly concerned about PFAS in the water, and everybody should be concerned. Or, you know, Monsanto glyphosate. This is actually polluting the water of our state.
Mm-hmm.
And we should really be concerned about that. And having, you know, $1 million set aside for your retirement means nothing if you can't drink water out of your well anymore.
Yeah.
Or you can't even water your own plants with your water because it's contaminated.
Well, I hate to say this, but there's glyphosate in the rain. The stuff is in the rain.
I know, and the lie that we were told is that glyphosate is really, you know, doesn't bother you, goes away in a day.
Exactly.
And now we've saturated the United States with glyphosate.
So why, if the corporations use the same playbook, why do we keep believing them? They've been doing this since the beginning of this country. They've been lying to us. They've always lied to us. Why do we believe them? You know what I'm saying? It's because they have money? Is that why? Because they make some money, so now all of a sudden, you know, they're the expert on everything. They put us in economic stress, then they come through and they hang a little carrot in front of us. Let's say the city of Viroqua, some companies come in. We'll give you $10,000 for the pool, and then all of a sudden they're at the table. They have an important voice. Why? Because they gave you a couple bucks. Where'd they get that money from? Who did they exploit somewhere else? Who did they parasitize somewhere in the world to get that little carrot to give to you, and now all of a sudden you give them validity? How about we look at where all these people get their money from? Where does it come from? Who did they exploit? Who did they destroy? What trees did they cut down? How did they get that? Because this major, the major amount of wealth around the world isn't because they're good people. It's because they figured out how to screw somebody over or destroy the mm-hmm. land to get it. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is.
You sound like a Marxist.
I don't want to put a label. I don't want to use any labels for myself.
Anytime somebody, you know, awakens to that, then they are really called woke or things that, you know, make people think that's bad thinking. But I think most people, if they really began to think about this, they would think there's something wrong with this system. There's something wrong. But if you realize, yes, most things, most wealth is gotten by exploiting somebody.
Right.
That sounds like anti-capitalism or something like that. And it's bad to think that way. America was built on, you know, a capitalistic.
But wait a minute. There's livings that could be made through what you call a right livelihood.
Can we do that?
Yes, we can.
Well, yay.
That used to be what we did more of years ago. We had right livelihoods. I mean, I grew up with my grandparents. They had a small farm. They didn't cover it with chemicals. My grandma raised chickens and geese, and she butchered them, and she sold them, and she didn't hurt anybody, and they didn't destroy the land. They had a right livelihood. And my grandpa, he would fix machinery. You know, there's lots and lots of things we can do where we're not exploiting or destroying somebody. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's probably a point for a whole nother show. We could have a show just about right livelihoods, but there's like global prizes for people that have right livelihoods. They choose to do something that brings happiness and health to humans mm-hmm. and non-humans, and that is their life path. There's, mm-hmm. and the thing is, then you have to start interrogating this idea of why do we need endless supplies of money to be happy? We don't. We need air and water, a little bit of land, a little bit of shelter, some good food. When I went into the global south and kind of went into Yucatan and here and there, those people were extremely happy. They were extremely accommodating. I mean,
they weren't rolling in dough.
No, no. Actually, what they had was a wealth of spirit that I rarely see in this country. Mm-hmm. Like an immense amount of heart, like a big heart in their chest that you don't see here. Because the more you worry about money, the more your heart shrinks mm-hmm. until it's almost gone. Mm-hmm.
Well, when I started doing this food show more and more as the years went by, I began to realize that people would benefit from thinking about where food comes from. And I think maybe still a lot of people are very naive and thinking there are family farms out there, and that when they are getting food in the grocery store, it's coming from somebody who drives his own tractor or her own tractor and, you know, wears a straw hat and has laundry hanging on the line.
Yep.
Not really. Who are farmers now? They really are kind of impersonal businesses that mostly, you know, a lot of them are leasing land, and they don't have any responsibility for restoring the land. The people, the last few farmers that own family land are often leasing that out to big farmers. And then I wanted to mention this earlier, I've just been driving around Bernie County and thinking, where are the contour strips? A lot of them are being plowed away. We used to have contour strips everywhere. And that means, you know, following, you know, USDA would come out and they would mark so that you would not have a soil erosion. And they were beautiful. They were like quilts. And now we're plowing up huge, huge pieces of land, and it's sitting bare. And also brown, and also with the hedgerows killed by glyphosate, and not having habitat for wild.
I'll tell you why
animals,
that happened.
Birds, we know what's happening.
I'll tell you why that happened. We used to have 28,000 dairy farms, or was it 280,000? Yeah, I think it's 280,000 dairy farms in Wisconsin. That's why they had the hay strips, because they had to feed the dairy cows, right? And they were all small farms, maybe 160 acres, maybe 200 acres, right? And
mixed
so they had
crops.
Some, exactly,
yes.
Exactly. Now we only have 6,800 left, and a lot of those are great big dairy CAFOs, okay? So the government, get big or get out. Remember Earl Butts? Okay, get big or get out. They're forcing the farmers to get out. If you're not gonna engage in all the government programs and subsidies to help you get big, then you're out. Okay, even Organic Valley dropped their small dairy farmers and went with Organic CAFO down in Arizona. Even Organic Valley did that here. So a whole bunch of organic dairy farmers went out of business. So what you see out there is you see commodity crops. You see corn and soybeans. It goes straight into the commodity pipeline and gets used all over the world for political influence, right? Or it gets made into ethanol, or it gets made into corn syrup. So there's no multi-cropping thing anymore. It's gone. And the people that are plowing up the strips, these are renters. We have now a rentier economy because the small farmers went out of business and they have to pay their taxes, so they lease their land out. And these guys come in and they destroy everything. They destroy the soil because they don't own the land. They don't care. They play it out till there's nothing left of it. And they fill it full of chemicals and treated seeds. And they don't care if it erodes into the ditches. They have absolutely no care about it in the world.
And I'm thinking, have we forgotten about the Dust Bowl in the 30s? Which was from playing out the land like that. Leaving it bare. And
all I can say is they don't care. Did you hear about Illinois where the people died on the highway?
No.
You didn't hear about that?
No.
The farmers were plowing the fields about a month ago and the wind kicked up and there's people going down the highway. I was at Highway 51. I can't remember which one. Anyway, they had a dust storm and 6 people died and 30 people ended up in the emergency room because they couldn't see anything. And that's because of what you just said. Who's doing that? The commodity crop, the big agribusiness. They killed those people on that road because those farmers don't have any other way to make a living than to grow corn and soybeans. There's nothing left. Slowly, the state came in and shut everybody down. So now we have corn and soybeans. That's it.
Okay, Julie, and I'm talking to Julie De La Terre of Singing Tree Farm right here near Viola. So you'd think, well, let's have these smaller farms not grow corn and soybeans. Aren't there other things to grow? Aren't there markets for these other things? And I think that's actually what we started to do this show about, is that those efforts don't get support. In fact, they get, regulations and things that kind of prevent them from doing
right.
It. Can you fight it by, say, doing maple syrup or doing, making your own yogurt or ice cream on your farm with your milk or,
Right.
Can you make a living by doing something?
Well, as soon as you try to do that, there's some sort of impediment in the form of a regulation to make it extremely hard for you to do it. So they actually force people to stay in the commodity growing business. It's just that's the way it's been organized. We are now the Banana Republic. Our land has been taken from the people here, which was taken from the people before, the Ho-Chunk, and now we're made to just grow for the commodity market, just like the Pineapple Republic, just like the Banana Republic. We don't have a choice. This has been done on purpose. So the only way we can change is if we get together as communities and start our own little agricultural cooperatives and figure out what each community needs and then reach out to those people holding that land and start changing it. Because if the supply chains get cut, you're going to starve because you're surrounded by corn and soybeans, and you can't eat that crap. Those soybeans are not edible. And that corn
the corn isn't
that
edible.
Corn is dreck. It's just for making ethanol. It's nasty.
I thought it was corn on the cob that you ate on the 4th of July. And
you don't want to go near that corn. It's toxic. GMO corn, every single GMO corn plant is registered as a pesticide. Every single plant. Because they're full of BT toxin, which is engineered into them. So that means any insect that lands on that corn plant, pollen or whatever, it's going to die. So now we're surrounded by fields full of insecticide plants. And then you wonder where the insects went. It's because big agribusiness is killing them with their crappy Frankenstein crops.
Right. So then, you need a public that understands how food grows. I mean, it really, one thing people could probably do is try to grow some things on their porch or patio and try to grow a few food items and just see what it means to say you need pollinators. I mean, how many people really understand what a pollinator does and what it would do to agriculture if we kill all the pollinators?
Right.
So people wonder, so many bees. Well, bees sting. Why do we need bees?
Oh, geez.
They really don't understand what bees or many, many other insects that, you don't even notice are actually making the fruit possible.
Right.
And, you know, just so many things. Because most of our population is really in cities or suburban areas, and people aren't growing crops. They aren't familiar with where things come from. And, you know, so we have things like CAFOs that make weight. And we've been saying CAFOs, and I bet a lot of people don't know
Confined
what a CAFO is.
Confined Animal Feedlot Operation.
And this doesn't mean like 500.
This means like 7,000.
7,000 pigs, 7,000 cattle. And it's too much manure. Manure used to be a good thing, but it can't all be in one place.
Right.
And so what was healthy in former agriculture has now gotten concentrated, and it's unhealthy.
Oh, let me tell you. I got to tell you what I see every spring out by me. So I tell you, there's a lot of Amish around me, but there's also a dairy CAFO. So every spring I get to see these great big black hoses running through the ditch and attached to tractors. And those hoses are 15 miles long, and they're coming from the CAFO. And they attach it to the tractors, and they inject the manure into the ground till the ground is black. And so now there's all these Amish, and everything stinks to high heck.
Oh, it really does. It's
right?
Horrible.
And there's these great big tractors running around, inserting this nasty stuff into the ground. And this is agriculture? This is not agriculture. This is treating the land like it's nothing. Like it's a factory, right? I mean, you have the animals in the CAFO, but you also have the land that's involved. That land is treated like crap. I mean, it's literally, pardon the pun, but it's like it has no value.
People have begun to think of the earth as, or soil, as just dirt to be, put fertilizer on or put pesticide on, and not really understanding that soil is alive.
Exactly.
And the live soil can't, if you kill it, then you don't have any life in the food.
Exactly. And you nailed it.
So we need a public that's more informed about this.
Right. I've done some reading about conventionally, quote unquote, grown food. It has hardly any micronutrients in or anything because, just as you said, the microbiome in the soil is non-existent. You might as well just grow it in sand, right? So unless you have a complete organic system or someone who actually knows how to bring in mycorrhizae, how to bring in the beneficial bacteria and the nematodes and have a living soil with air spaces and ways for there to be this whole wonderful jungle of symphony underneath your feet, you're not going to get a very good vegetable out of that. That is absolutely necessary for high energy food. So if you're going to get your food off of these sterile areas, you're not going to be getting any nutrition. It's just the way it is.
Well, the whole supplement industry
is,
saying, well, you're not getting enough magnesium, you're not getting enough potassium because of the way they're farming, so it's not in your food anymore. So now you need food supplements.
Right. So then what is it that you're putting in your mouth and chewing up? It's not food, is it? It's a food substitute. It's not really food. So go to the farmer's market and get real food from real people. That's where you find your nirvana. That's where you find your happiness. Mm-hmm. That's where you build your community. That's not the only place, but it's a good place to start, right? And that's where you start having relationships and understandings. Why don't you ask a farmer, well, what did it take for you to grow that lettuce? Okay, because I was talking earlier about a drought, but this year it's like a rabbit apocalypse. So there's like rabbits everywhere. And I've tried like everything to keep them off of my fields to the point where I had to like take some rotten eggs and make my own repellent with rotten eggs. It seems to be working, but either I've got deer or I've got rabbits. I've got organic strawberries. How do I keep the raccoons out? I have to put up a electric fence around the entire field. So it's not even like you just go out and plant and walk away and come back and hoe it. Now I've got creatures coming in because I'm growing high quality food. I got constantly. I got to constantly watch every single field because they don't want to have anything to do with that industrial agriculture. So if I plant native corn, the deer will come from like 5 miles away and they'll destroy it overnight. It's really hard to grow good quality food because the animals are craving it.
Julie, what are you growing on your three pieces of land?
I'm actually working with Ho-Chunk Nation. I'm growing some of their corn and trying to get a food project going with them. But like just about everything you can imagine, tomatoes, eggplants, peppers, onions, leeks, corn, squash, melons, just everything.
And the best thing you can do is just sell from your farm.
Come to the farmer's market. Yeah, I try to do a winter delivery thing, but that this winter it didn't really do very well, so I don't know if I'm even going to do it anymore. So, but if the community...
Well, hey, winter delivery means you have to have storage areas.
I have two root cellars full of food in the wintertime.
Yeah. Yep. Potatoes require something different from apples or beets or, you know... Yeah.
That's why I got a hold of the Ho-Chunk Nation, because I thought, well, there's a lot of tribal people that might be interested in that, because I'm not getting the support from this community in order to keep doing that, so I'm probably going to stop. So I'm just saying, people, if you want to be healthy, if you want to be happy, if you want to enjoy where you live, take care of your body and make sure you put the highest quality food into it, because they're killing us with this, what they call food. It's not food.
We are so fortunate. I don't know the statistics. I've heard them over and over again. But really, this portion of Wisconsin is the highest concentration of organic farms in the United States. This is a really wonderful place.
But you know what's interesting about that?
What?
There's people coming from other areas like Chicago, Milwaukee, and taking our stuff back to their communities, and the people here aren't eating it.
They aren't.
Nope. Not at the levels that it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But all these other areas are recognizing how good it is, and they're coming in and they're taking it back to the big urban areas. But it's not being consumed here. There's no food security here. I've reached out to different communities and had lots of meetings with people. I'm like, what is your plan? What is your food security plan? Nobody has a food security plan.
Meaning what? Food
Meaning
security?
Meaning you, let's say a community needed a ton of rolled oats every year. Go out and find a farmer, have them grow your oats, find a roller, get them rolled, and you got them. That's food security, where you're going out and talk to people around you and you make sure that your food is produced within 50 miles of where you live. It's entirely possible. You just get together and do it. Because once they cut your supply line, you starve.
Is there a group that's doing that now?
No, it's what I keep preaching to people to do. Okay. Nobody's doing it. It's the way to do it.
Oh, we're out of time. Thank you, Julie Delatier.
Thank you.
From Singing Tree Farm, thank you so much for all the work that you're doing and your passion. And I hope that people will feel inspired to grow their own, support the family farm and the farmers market and the CSAs. Vernon Economic Development Association and the Food Enterprise Center has been part of that to say we need to do things with what we have here and keep them here, keep the money here, flowing here, be sustainable.
Yep.
So thank you very much, and thank you to my listeners. You're listening to WDRT 91.9 FM and streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org, where you can hear this show. It will be on our podcast. You've been listening to Who's in the Kitchen, and I'm Philothea Beeson, and we'll be on again next week. And the last Saturday of every month is totally dedicated to farming.
Yay! Good job, Philothea!
Thank you so much. And thanks to my listeners and those who support community radio.
Right on.
Yay.